In the spirit of true confession, I have to admit it's kind of difficult to interview Mitch DeBrowner because he just resists being interviewed. He's so friendly, so open, so conversational, so humble that it's kind of difficult to put him on a pedestal and interview him from the position of authority. He just refuses to be an authoritative figure. He's just a nice guy. A nice guy with terrific photography, a nice guy with well-founded wisdom, a nice guy who really understands the process of being an artist. And so that was what our conversation was about this time. I've interviewed Mitch several times before, and a lot of times we talk about technology, we talk about the adventure aspects of what he's doing. But in this conversation, we focused more on his art making, his motivations, what it is he hopes to accomplish and share with his imagery. Well, you'll find out as you listen to my interview. No, that's not quite right. To my conversation with Mitch DeBrowner. You'll get a big kick out of this. You know, I do these reviews for people where they send me a body of work, and they want some help or opinions or whatever the case may be. I did a review for a guy last week, and his question was, other than comments about the work and how you think I might improve it, what I'd really like you to address is I'd like to get my work seen. So how do I become the next Ansel Adams, Edward Weston, Michael Kenna, or Mitch DeBrowner?
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, Brooke.
I thought that was great.
That was pretty funny.
Well, it's, you know, there's some truth to it. You have become a little bit of a beacon of hope, I think, for a lot of contemporary photographers who have a hard time getting visible, getting seen, breaking into the art world, as it were.
Right.
If you're a famous dead guy, you know, it's pretty easy because you were there before photography was popular, and so you rise to the top just because you were there, and a lot of the previous generations of photographers have done that. But I think for a lot of people, particularly a lot of Lenswork readers, quite honestly, you've become sort of the roadmap of how to become famous in photography because of the National Geographic thing, because of the Aperture thing, and so You're the man, Mitch.
I don't know how that happened. It happened because of you, Brooks. You know, you're the first one to publish me. I'm serious, you know. Well, if I can do it, anybody can do it. You know what I mean? I'm not anything special, you know. I'm just who I am. I'm humbled by the whole thing. I never pound my chest. I'm just in shock.
Well, my theory on that has always been something like this, for whatever it's worth. That let's say you are a young singer and you say, I want to be the next Madonna. What is the program that I have to get on to be the next Madonna?
Right.
It's virtually impossible to do that because the only reason Madonna got to be Madonna was not because of some formula that she followed or something that was anything unique about her. There's lots of young singers who are just as talented as she is. Mm-hmm. And just as their voice is just as magical and blah, blah, blah. What happens though with that kind of superstardom is you happen to be the right guy at the right time in the right place. And there's a tremendous amount of luck and serendipity and cultural tides and waves that just pick you up and carry you along, and there you are.
I was, I think, the right person at maybe the right time, but there's a lot behind that. I mean, I ran my own company, so I had like a background in business. I wasn't that mm-hmm. great at it, but I self-taught myself. I maybe had an eye for photography. I just really liked photography, right? I mm-hmm. worked in technology as a senior technology manager right next to the CTOs at Disney and Sony at DreamWorks. So I kind of understood technology. So I studied sensitometry when I was a teenager when I started getting into it. So all these kind of things came together the right time, you know, getting back. I loved photography, and I really just wanted the pictures to speak for themselves. You know, and I was never a big, you know, person who really wanted to do interviews or go up in front of cameras or do any of that stuff. I just really wanted the pictures to speak for me because it was my art. It wasn't, I wasn't trying to be Ansel Adams. I wasn't trying to do any of that stuff, you know? So I just felt like really fortunate, totally fortunate for what has happened. I know how lucky I am. I know the world of, you know, Instagram and all this other stuff has changed the world of photography some. To like what you would, what you were saying a little bit, it was like 2000, I think it was 2013, when I won that Sony Award for the like photographer of the year. I didn't even want to go to the UK. They didn't tell me I had won, you know, but I think I had told you this story before when I was at dinner, and I don't even own a collared shirt. I only own T-shirts, but I had to buy a collared shirt because it was black tie. I go to the dinner, you know, it's a big hadoo, and I'm eating, and you know, my wife, there's some great photography there, you know, social documentary, fashion, architecture, you know, landscape, everything's there. And I was eating, and I wasn't paying attention. She's like, no way I'm going to win this. You know, it's just there's just no way. There's just too much good work here, you know. And as I was eating, my wife kicked me, and she said, you better pay attention, you know, because your work looks really different from everything else I've seen. So I ended up winning, and I hadn't have a speech, but when I went up there, I was thinking, like, what am I going to say? And when I went up, I realized that what I really felt honored about was that the judges at Sony or whoever it was actually said that black and white landscape photography wasn't dead. So it wasn't about, like, me, Mitch, winning some award. It was just saying that I never really thought black and white landscape photography was going to be you know, highlighted again as something that was relevant.
Well, but my point was simply this, that you're a terrific photographer, that goes without saying. If you were a bad photographer, all of this wonderful stuff wouldn't have happened. But you're a good photographer, and that's what you're emphasizing is, first and foremost, you know, you pursued your craft, you were, like you say, studied in sensitometry, and you set out to do the best photographs that you possibly could with the highest standards you could. And that's sort of a given. Not everybody does that, but you did. But so did lots of other people who haven't become as well known and as collectible as you have. And to some degree, everybody who rises to that level of acknowledgement and credibility and collectability and et cetera, has an element of luck. I've said for years that Ansel Adams became Ansel Adams partly because of his images, because they're fantastic, but also because he happened to be the right guy at the right time during the birth of the environmental movement. And so he got carried along, you know, with a zeitgeist that was affecting all of society. And to some degree, you know, you're that way too. Again, if you had bad photographs, all of the luck in the world wouldn't help you, but you had good photographs, and right at the time when people became fascinated in some of the subjects you were photographing, there you were, having done the work.
Yeah.
Not for fame, but because you wanted to do the work.
Yeah. And I think probably the Storm portfolio had something to do with that, with all the conversations about climate change right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it was just the right subject by accident. It was just because I liked to shoot in inclement weather.
Yeah, and you didn't set out, and this is the point I want to make for people who are listening to this. It's not like you set out and said, gee, what can I go photograph that will make me famous?
Right.
You know, that was the last thing you were thinking about. What you said was, I'm really fascinated by this subject material, and I'm going to go photograph it, and I'm going to try to do it in a way that's terrific, and maybe that no one's done it before. And you did, and you worked hard at it, and it took you years to do it, and then the acknowledgments came.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I think you hit it on the perfect illustration of it, which was, I didn't do it for fame or any of that stuff. Or I don't think I'm, as my family says, I'm infamous, you know, to my family, you know. Mm-hmm. I really just shot the images for myself and for my family to show them my experiences. But it was always about the image. The other thing is that when, you know, you illustrated, you know, the like Madonna thing, you know, how can it be the next Madonna? I think, you know, for me, it was, I like my pictures because for me, they are what I feel on the inside about me. You know, when I worked for Pete Turner, this was a long, long time ago as an assistant, he was always like, break the rules, never listen to what anybody says unless it's constructive. You know, if you hear criticism, if it's constructive, listen to it. If it's not constructive, don't listen to it. Mm-hmm. But just be yourself. Like, everybody has their own vision of the world, just like everybody is completely even twins are different, you know. So my pictures, I feel like they illustrate how I see the world. You know, so I keep on saying, like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. It's just trying not to plagiarize or to be something that you're not. It's just like, be yourself. I think I have told you once, it was a story of a photographer when I first got introduced to photography, you know, through a gallery that we had dinner, and he was an older gentleman, really nice man, really well known. He was taking a look at my images, and he made some comments, and then he said, well, look at my images. The ones I shot like in the 60s or the 50s look really similar to the ones that I shoot today. I mean, look at the grade, you know, look at how I grade the images, look at, you know, the values in black and white. And, you know, my response to that was, and I didn't mean to be negative, was, what, I don't understand it, because are you saying that, you know, when you're shooting in the 60s and then you're shooting in, like, you know, whatever, 2010 or whatever that year that was, your vision of the world never changed. Your mind never expanded. You never had different ideas. It should be reflected in your photography. Even Ansel Adams' work, that same negative that he shot, what, in the 60s or whatever, and regraded in, you know, 10 years later, whatever it was. I just remember looking at some of the images, and the, you know, the Lone Pine image, is completely different when he regraded it. It's just more high contrast. It's more, to me, it's somewhat more dramatic. I actually like it a little bit more. But even just the same negative that was printed differently years later changed that vision a bit. So I just always think that your photography should always reflect who you are, and you should never think about any. To me, I never think about anything but that image, you know. I mean, yeah, and really striving for it. I mean, I just came back from Nevada. I can't pronounce words correctly anymore. You know, and I was there for, I don't know, a week. And I just went after one image, you know. It took me like 7 days to get the one image that I had envisioned before I went out there. So the thing of really also working really hard for an image. And I never feel confident that I'm going to get it until I get it. I keep on trying harder and harder to improve. My family knows I'm just somebody who's never satisfied with the level that I'm at right now.
Well, that brings me to a point that you brought up in the introduction to this body of work in this issue of Lenswork, and that's that the backstory about how the photograph was made is... It's really not very important. And so much of the backstory of the Storms project itself, particularly now that you've had the book published and you're well known for these, lots of the press and lots of the interviews that you've had to endure, they focus on that backstory. They want to know how dangerous it was and how close did you come to getting wiped out and all that kind of stuff. But you could sort of care less about that.
Right. So I really like been talking about really changing that narrative, because I think it takes away from the value of the photographs. It's not about, you know, the drama and that, you know, dangerous narrative. It's like just turns it into like some kind of a TV show or something. It turns it away from photography or the images. So I don't think it's intentional. I think people just want to write interesting stories or have interesting views about, you know, the people will listen to and hear storms and danger and tornadoes and destruction. But that's not how I see the storms. You know, I see the storms as these really beautiful, amazing phenomenon that are created and will never be the same again. it's really, it takes away from what I'm trying to show as far as just the images and how beautiful these storms are. That's important to me. You know, I was disappointed with some of the ones where, you know, I slipped and maybe said something like, yeah, what a great way to die. And it's like, I shouldn't even have said that, because then somebody would quote that and put that in the story. It's not, it just took away from the work. The work is my art. You know, it's how I regenerate myself. And I'm just lucky enough that people seem to like the work. And I really do count myself lucky, you know. And I was at the right place at the right time. And it is a subject that has caught people's attention because of, you know, the conversations about climate change.
Well, there's one aspect of your body of work, too, that occurred to me while we were publishing this storm. Because this is the second time you've been in lens work with storms work. And so there's enough images now that there's no question about what it is that you're photographing. And here's what I mean by that. In none of your photographs do we see anything about the terrible, horrific, destructive power of these storms. You don't go in and photograph the aftermath and the destroyed communities and people's lives, because that's not what these storms are to you, even though they are that in quote-unquote reality. To you, they're beautiful, they're powerful, they're a representation of the earth and the awesomeness that it is in its giant scale, and to some degree, how tiny we humans are in contrast to them. And that shows up in all of your pictures, but not the destructive power.
And the same thing, I think, goes through, you know, the work that I've done on urban landscapes, you know, or even the landscapes mm-hmm. of the Southwest. The part about the destruction and so forth, I just leave that to the photographers who are interested in that and really good at photographing it. It's just not what I see when I see these storms. Or actually, it's not even what I see when I see urban landscapes or the Southwest, you know. I mean, I just see the earth as a really beautiful place, you know. I mean, there's enough stuff that's out there that is negative right now. And when it comes to, you know, what I call my art or my photography, it inspires me. You know, it's my kind of happy place to be, to detox from all those other things that you see every day in the news or wherever. So I just see the world as a really beautiful place, you know. I said even Los Angeles granted me a grant to hang my stuff in their metro systems because they weren't used to somebody showing work that made L.A. look pretty. You know, different, you know, and I was like, well, too bad. That's too bad because I wouldn't live here if I didn't like it, you know, and I do see, you know, the urban landscapes as being really beautiful. It sounds a little wacky sometimes, but I just have to always remind myself that we're on a rock spinning through space and everything that's in front of us isn't what it really seems to be. You know, there's this other reality. That we need to just be conscious of and grateful, you know, for what we have in our lives and so forth like that. So I don't want to show anything negative in my photography because that's not what I'm thinking when I have my camera in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that you said in your introduction, and I'll quote you, you said, "The pictures truly do evoke what I feel on the inside about our planet." Well, you know, for the rest of us who are looking at your images, what we see are these terribly destructive storms. But having you explain that that's not your perspective, that your perspective is the beauty, the grace, the power, the strength of the planet. And, you know, the planet doesn't think much about us.
Yeah.
It just does what it does.
The planet, we're here, you know, we're planted here. The planet, it's going to do its thing, you know. I mean, just like weather, you know, these storms get created when all these elements became, you know, come together. You know, humidity, shear, everything mm-hmm. comes together. But the whole idea of the storms is that they cleanse the environment. They stabilize the environment again. So when a storm ends, usually the next couple of days are just beautiful outside because the environment has stabilized again. So there's actually a purpose for them, you know, and I see that as the purpose. The purpose mm-hmm. isn't to, like, destroy a town or kill anybody. The purpose is the earth is doing its thing. It's regenerating. It's cleansing the environment. So it's all science, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. There was one image in this collection that we've published that really brought this home to me about what it was that you were seeing. And it's the image that has the funnel cloud, white funnel cloud against a dark background. But the left side of the photograph has a line of disappearing telephone poles and power lines and et cetera. And that image was an eye-opener for me because I realized that you photographed it in such a way that there wasn't any of this destruction that I've been talking about, that instead it's just a funnel cloud, and isn't it pretty, right. But it hasn't done anything yet. And to me, that was the clue to understand your mindset in making this artwork, was sort of your sense of wonder and awe at what you're witnessing.
That same tornado, I think there was a different shot of it hovering just above a farm before, you know, and it didn't hit the farm.
Yes.
You know, and these people live in that environment all the time. You know, a shot, I believe, in Kansas, you know, I think that was Syracuse, Kansas. It was an amazing storm. It was just an amazing storm. Nothing got damaged, you know. The thing about photographing these storms too, which I realize, is the challenge of me improving as a person to be able to be in a situation like that and to stay focused and to not be alarmed or scared, or how to deal with the environment itself, which I think, you know, is kind of like, as you go through life, you know, you get hit with lots and lots of challenges, you know, and you have to walk through those fires. And I think when I first started shooting the storms, it was like, holy cow, you know, this is interesting, but it's like, how do I do this and stay focused? And I think now that I've been doing it, and, you know, I have to give my friend Roger Hill credit because he helps me get in front of these storms, it's just allowed me to stay calm and focused in the midst of this chaos going on around me. You know, and I think just not just in photography, but I think as a person, it's just allowed me to improve how to deal with pressures and stress and things like that. And just stay the course, just to be calm, to be more meditative in those moments and to achieve the things that I want to achieve. So I think that's one of the things about that project has really helped me grow as a person. So anyway, I mean, that's what the narrative is to me. The narrative is a little bit beyond just the photography, the images. I'm proud of the work. I like my work. I'm grateful and humbled that other people like the work or seem to like the work. But it goes beyond the work, and it's just to try to give people a different perspective that the world, you know, the environment, the landscapes, the people, it's just a beautiful place, you know, and that just be grateful for what we have. I mean, that's, I'm not trying to be melodramatic about the whole thing. It's just, that's when I get into that zone, I feel like I can photograph. When I go out in the field, it takes like a couple of days just to get in that zone. I waste my time. I know I waste my time the first couple of days. The recent trip to Nevada, for the first 2 or 3 days, I'm shooting and I wasn't even there, you know. I was like looking at what I was shooting and photographing it, but my mind was someplace else. And it took 5 days to get into that zone again.
Right, right. Well, and you've been photographing these storms now for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're done with them, or are you going to be photographing them for the rest of your life?
Well, hopefully I'll photograph them for the rest of my life, you know. So I just enjoy it. You know, I don't see them as being repetitive because everyone's a little bit different. There are other things that I would like to shoot. You know, if you look at the project, you know, you'll see supercells and tornadoes and land spouts and monsoons. There's still things like there's just different. There's all these different types of storm systems that I still would be really interested in photographing. You know, the storms that take place over the ocean in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Things like, let's say, water spouts. I have a relationship with the people at NOAA now. They seem to like my work and been invited to photograph hurricanes. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet. I might not come back, but that's a different type of a storm.
Maybe the answer is with a really, really wide-angle lens.
Actually, really, really wide angle lens for that project. Hopefully I'll get on one next year. I tried this year. I couldn't get on them. I've been invited to go with the Hurricane Hunters to fly in the planes, but I don't know how those things are going to come out, but that's the challenge. You know, when I went out, I was with somebody and, they were asking me about like the formula for my photography. And I was like, there really kind of is no formula. It's the challenge as a photographer is whatever Mother Nature gives you, whether it's bright sunlight or a storm or, you know, golden hour or rain or whatever it is. As a photographer, that's your challenge, is to make a good photograph in whatever conditions that you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said for years, sort of jokingly, that the really best photographers don't take photographs or even make photographs. What they do is they receive photographs.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that takes time. With the storm project, I really, really enjoy it. It's allowed me also to see different parts of the United States, now maybe different part of the world even, that I would have never have experienced.
Well, there's lots of fantastic landscape anywhere. The question is, are we prepared and ready to receive it?
Right.
And part of that, of course, is being prepared photographically with appropriate skills, et cetera. Part of it is being out there. And that's one of the best parts about the way you work, is you just love spending time out there. You talk about going out for 5 days before you really get in the zone and can start photographing. For a lot of people, 5 days is the entire photographic trip.
Well, it's the same thing for me of photographing, let's say, getting in the zone for photographing storms or, let's say, a landscape. It's the same kind of illustration as if you're taking a portrait of a person. I need to understand. I need to get into the environment. Let's say the Southwest is an example. Just the environment, the culture that's going on around, the people that are around that area, the desert, gone out to the maze in Canyonlands and for 10 days. And the same thing with the storms, just to get into that mode of wow, look at these amazing phenomenons. And look at how lucky we are to stand in front of one. Let's say those 9, 10 years, I think we calculated about 150,000 miles of driving for those photographs. Just to understand how, there's times where I've spent 4 days in like St. Louis and nothing's happening and, bored out of my mind. And then, the fifth day we run into a storm, and how lucky it is, I am to be standing. That might be the only storm that I see in the whole trip. When I'm standing in front of a storm, that's just, and I can take a good photograph. I realize, I think that's maybe one-tenth of the process. The process kind of started with the idea and making the idea of the journey just to the physical location, and the idea of taking a picture, and the idea of looking at it and backing up and grading it. And for me, again, everything that I do, the print is my final product. I'm not thinking of a JPEG on the internet. It's a great way to show stuff and to get the work out there if you want to. But my whole idea is to make the best print that I can possibly make. The whole thing of printing it, grading it, grading it, looking at an artist's proof. And, when somebody purchases a print for their home or for whatever they do, the honor of somebody thought that image was relevant to hang in their home, and shipping it. I don't even, we talked about this with cutting the tape and everything, but I don't even let my kids pack the prints or ship them. And actually the last person I talked to was even surprised that I printed them myself. You mean you don't send it out to a service? It's like, I can't even fathom that, not that it's wrong and people should do that if that's their thing, but I can't fathom that as part of my whole process. It's like from the very beginning to the very end, down to auditioning a print and signing it. It's just that whole journey is so inspiring to me. It's one of the things that just infused me with energy. I just really, really like it, And just to capture an image that you really like. When you capture an image and you see it up on the screen and you really like that image that you captured, that adrenaline rush, to me is way bigger than even standing in front of a tornado.
Yeah, it is. And as a matter of fact, that's the whole reason to be involved in the artwork and everything else that happens subsequent to that, that is to say, you know, selling the work and exhibiting the work and et cetera, all that's just gravy. It's when yeah. it's you and the print and it's done and you're looking at it all by yourself in the studio. To me, that's the whole purpose.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the other stuff is gravy. And it can be nice gravy, but what it does is it allows me to continue to fund the projects mm-hmm. that I want to do. You know, I might not be able to do some of the projects without the ability to have galleries that sell my prints. I know how lucky that is, you know?
Well, and I don't know if you've noticed it, but cameras are expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
they got to be funded somehow.
Yeah, they have to. Papers, inks, the whole thing.
Travel, et cetera.
And actually, this was a real honor, and I know you have a relationship with 21st Editions, you know, but they, you know, my books are in their library now in the, I don't remember, the Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You know, their collection is now in there, which means my books are in there too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So it's like, what an honor. Holy shoot. You know, I'm not going to make. Probably not going to make it 20 more years, you know, but to have, you know, the books be left behind and to actually have books done, you know, I have books that I can give to my kids, you know, my grandkids.
Well, and in our little world of photography, I don't know anybody who does books to the level and the caliber of just gorgeous expertise that 21st does. They spare no expense in making really top drawer stuff.
Yeah. They're passionate just like you, you know, they're passionate with what they do. They enjoy it and they put it all on the line.
Well, lens work things are a little more affordable.
No, but it's not just like pumping you up to say nice things to Brooks because I like you, but it's a one of a kind. You know, and that's why you have such a base, you know, subscriber base is because it's about the work. It's about the art. It allows people to show their work where, you know, there's not a lot of other venues that are out there like that. And, you know, the thing with my work is, you know, I've never promoted my work. One of the only times I ever did was when I sent you one of my portfolios back in 2006 or 2007 and you published it. And after that, everything kind of dominoed and people had called because they liked the work. And to me, that was the biggest honor of anything. It wasn't me out there pounding my chest saying, I want to be great and famous and all this stuff. It was just that I felt like the work spoke for me, spoke for myself, and it stood on its own. It was just the beginning of where I was.
Well, you've been at Lenswork 5 times now, plus a monograph, and that's been our honor to do all that. And I trust this isn't the last time we'll see you in the pages of Lenswork. And as always, Mitch, it's been just a blast having a chance to chat with you and look forward to the next time you're in Lenswork.
Thank you, Brooks. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much. I'm honored, totally honored.
Copyright 2018, Lenswork Publishing.